Welcome to the Truth About Public Sector podcast. The public sector is a key component of our society. Sometimes, as a member of the public, it can be difficult to understand what challenges they are facing, the solutions they're implementing, and fundamentally, how that affects our day-to-day lives. The purpose of this podcast is to shine a light on topics and issues that are prevalent in the public sector, and hopefully, by shining a light on these problems and the solutions being implemented, it will drive a greater level of engagement from the public with public sector organisations across the UK.
Welcome back to The Truth About Public Sector, and today I have one of the leading experts in the country within the higher education space. I have Professor Graham Galbraith, who is the University of Portsmouth Vice Chancellor. And in this role as Chief Executive and Chief Academic Officer, he has the responsibility to lead one of the leading UK universities. But as a sector, there are challenges at the moment, and we're going to be discussing that today. We're also going to be discussing international students, and we're going to be discussing the economic and social contributions that higher education institutions have on their local area and regions, and in particular, some of the negative commentary and narratives that have been in the press recently. So firstly, Graham, thank you so much for your time today. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you know, my name makes it difficult for people, but it's Galbraith.
It's a
Scottish name, really, really hard. So don't worry about that. Listen, it's fine. But just in case people don't know who I am when they hear a different pronunciation. But great to see you, Matthew.
Thank you for your time again. So if we can start with talking about the economic and social contributions of higher education, because there is a growing narrative of people being comfortable seeing higher education providers go under. And that's just so wrong on so many levels. But if you can start, Graham, why is that so wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look up and down the country, the interesting thing about higher education, it's placed everywhere in the United Kingdom and therefore has a contribution locally to all sorts of parts of the country that other organisations don't have. So it's not like a massive, big, multi-billion pound business that's located in one part of the United Kingdom. It's spread throughout the whole of the UK, Scotland and Wales, and therefore it touches so many communities. And you know, when I say that the economic contribution overall for UK higher education is about 106 billion. That's many billions added to the UK economy. Now, when people are talking about universities going bust, it's easy to say that. But the reality is, of course, it will impact individual people's lives and it will impact ordinary people, never mind the students who attend the university, the staff who have an income from being lecturers, teachers, who look after the estates and do all those kinds of jobs that are involved in it. But it will have an impact on the ordinary people in the communities that the university sits. So I think it's a bit crass. The second thing is, if we were, you know, a massive multi-billion pound company, as we sort of are, then the government would be saying, let's do everything that we can to close down that resource that's one of the biggest export industries in the United Kingdom. So I find it just depressing. They would never do that. They would never say what would be really great is a couple of water companies went bust. That would be really fantastic for the United Kingdom. They wouldn't say, wouldn't it be fantastic if one of our big defence industries went bust because, you know, we've decided that, well, there's just too much in defence or there's, or whatever. They would take a very different attitude. We are one of the biggest export industries in the United Kingdom. And I sometimes think because we sort of swing between public sector and private sector in a way that often when it suits the government, we're treated like private sector. And the public treat us like private sector. When it suits the government, they treat us as public sector, and so does the population. And I think it makes it very, very difficult sometimes for us to have proper debates about the contribution of higher education.
Because it's more than just the local economy, which is obviously a huge part to it. It's also about place shaping. It's about the identity and the culture of a region. When you look at the impact it has on employment, but also skills, this is how you future-proof a region. And I guess sometimes, you know, I've got to say, I loved the letter that you sent to Suella Braverman. I thought that it was right on the line. I thought you were very articulate, but you made the point. And I think there is a lack of understanding and also a lack of appreciation for the impact that universities have in future proofing, particularly when you look at levelling up as a collective and they're trying to increase devolution. You've got to reinforce those local economies.
In fact, it's the other way around. I mean, when I have conversations with people from some of our forgotten cities in the UK, what the leaders of those cities and towns want is a university. Because, of course, if you have a university where you have skilled people coming or people coming from around the area to be upskilled and to learn and become educated, then actually that then attracts businesses into the region because you've got a workforce that's skilled and has higher education. And if you look around the world, every other economy is saying, oh, my goodness, what we need with the developments of AI and new technologies is more highly skilled people, more highly educated people rather than less. And I do get quite upset when government ministers talk about academia as if it's not about skills or academia as if it's not about vocational learning. And I always use the example of medicine. What could be more vocational than studying medicine? Because you only go into one thing, which is medicine. What could be more skills orientated than medicine, considering it involves a high level of skill to be able to work with patients? But what could be more academically challenging than medicine? And, you know, medicine is an example of the many, many things that we do at universities where it's a combination of, yes, academic study, but also skill and developing the skills that the nation needs, but also leading into employment. And I think we need to change the narrative, which is around universities and academia, not skills. It's some other part of education that deals with skills. We deal with skills, and so we should deal with skills.
One of the other things that recently has been quite a talking point is international students. How much of a challenge has the, I don't know if it's a fair comment around the reducing numbers, been on the higher education institution?
It's a huge challenge, massive challenge, because the real reality, and again, it's something that really upsets me how sort of ill-informed the debate is. I hear people saying, oh my goodness, international students are taking the place of home students. This is a nonsense. International students are paying for the education of home students, because if we did not have international students, we could not teach our home students, because the fee that we get for home students has been fixed since 2016. Actually, it only went up by £250 since 2013. Now, you imagine any business whose prices are the same today after the inflation that we've gone through as they were back in 2012-13, no business would do. I mean, I laugh when I get my Virgin Media bill and it says, well, just to let you know, that contract that you've got, the prices go up by RPI inflation plus 3% every year. You know, because businesses do that, but in higher education, for some reason, our fee has been fixed. Therefore, our income per student has been fixed. I lose a couple of £1,000 every time I teach a home student. But I do that because it's the right thing to do. And I do that because I can, because I can subsidise it by charging very high fees for international students.
So do you think a lot of the narratives that are anti what we've just discussed there and the need for international students comes down to a lack of understanding as the economics of how the HE sector works?
I think so. I think there is an issue there. I mean, one of the other things that I often hear government talk about is the huge cost to the Treasury of higher education. Now I am no expert, but the latest, I think it's the latest, I can't remember, it's Form 5 or something of the loan system. I mean, the latest estimation that came for that was that the government would be contributing actually less than 10% of the cost of higher education, because the student's going to pay it all back through higher cost in terms of paying back their loan. But of course, they also get higher salaries. Therefore, they also pay more tax. So the whole thing is a kind of nonsense discussion. And I think, you know, I think that the public get bombarded with stuff. One of the things, though, that's interesting is if you actually ask the public about immigration, about the public's concern about immigration, and ask them specifically, are they concerned about immigration related to international students? The general answer is no, they're not. But unfortunately, we bundled international students into this net migration count that we all get so worried about. You remember the government said, we'll get net migration down to tens of thousands, which of course they knew was a lie because it was never going to be possible, but then they did it anyway to wind the public up. Now, of course, we've got net migration at the, well, just shy of a million people a year, but counted in that is students. And it shouldn't be counted in that, because students are not your what people understand as being migrants. They are coming here to study, and then they go home. Or if they really can make a contribution to the economy and get a good job, then they will stay here. And they are very sought after because we have a skill shortage in the UK at the moment.
They're propping up the economy, but also, I mean, how much of a threat do you think the upcoming Migration Advisory Committee review of the graduate visa may be?
It's a huge threat. I mean, unfortunately, as I say, we are one of the premier destinations for international students. We are a huge export industry, but like any export industry, it needs to have the conditions in which it can export carefully protected. One of the competitive areas around international students is this visa process, where students who do a qualification here have the opportunity to remain and work in the UK for 2 years after they study. Now, that's not as generous as some other countries like Australia, Canada and America, although they're now looking at their rules. But the reality is, if you take that away, it's like turning around to any big car manufacturing, saying, well, what we're going to do is we're going to put a tariff on you that makes your goods not as competitive as the other countries who are producing those goods. And it's exactly like this with higher education. This would make us, it would be like a tariff. It would make us less competitive in that market. For us alone, we've estimated that for the University of Portsmouth, if they removed that, then past experience would suggest that that could cost us upwards of £22 million a year on income. Now, that is 22. The only way that I can recover that, I'm really being honest, is to say, well, I've got to cut my cost by 22 million. And you don't need to be a genius to work out how many jobs that involves. And of course, associated with that 22 million of income that I get, it's probably another 40 million into the economy when you look at accommodation, living costs, people buying things when they're here and studying. You know, it has a huge economic impact, and would have a devastating impact on the university, but also on Portsmouth and the Solent region.
So Graham, I want to focus now on solutions. So from what I can take from, you're the expert in this sector. I love your passion, I love your energy. How do we get the funding system to work properly? How do we get the narrative to work to that people truly appreciate the place shaping potential and the economy significance of higher education authorities? What needs to happen?
Well, I think it's real. There's not easy solutions to it. The first thing can I say is that if we take international students out of the debate on immigration, right? And if we remove them from that debate by not counting them in the immigration count, which is a perfectly sane and rational thing to do, then this pressure to get immigration numbers down, the government's pressures to get immigration number down, and the things that people are worried about. Whereas with this, they can just turn on and off the tap of international students, and it makes it look like they've done some great thing on reducing immigration. So I think that's number one. And then that would change the debate and the rhetoric, because one of the things that's most damaging economically to the sector is a negative projection of UK as a destination for international students. And that perception internationally affects the market. So that's number one. Change the rhetoric and be more positive about what is one of the jewel in the crown's export industries in the UK. Be positive about it. Talk it up. And the second thing is take international students out and allow us to use that income, as we've done in the past, to support our teaching of home students. The next thing that we need to do is we need to have a national debate about what we want from higher education, because I think that what's happened over the last few years is governments have expected more and more and more for higher education, and vice chancellors being as they are, we look to give more and more and more, but we can't give more with less money in real terms. And so for me, if the government turned around and said, look, you have to provide higher education at a lower cost, and I would turn around and say, well, why are you expecting me to spend £1,000 of the students' money on access and participation and forcing me asking me, because I want to do it, to support schools in my area, which is what universities do. But you can't ask us to do all those added things and not pay for us doing them. And that's where the hub of the matter is. The expectations in higher education need to be controlled to meet the amount of income that the country is willing to invest in higher education. Now, I get it that money is tight. I get it that the government wants to put money into other things. But I think, don't forget higher education. And one thing they could do for home students, it doesn't help the economic problem of the universities, but it would help home students, is do something about the maintenance support for students, because students are struggling. A lot of students in the UK are not reaching their potential because the maintenance loan, and it is a loan, is simply inadequate for them to be able to live and study at university. And I think they should reintroduce maintenance grants for those students that really are struggling to be able to go to university. And I think that they should increase the size of the maintenance loan. That's something they could do for students. If they do that for students, it helps us, because it means that the profile of the university is improved, and we're struggling because the students turn to us for help. You know, we're struggling to be able to give the help that we know that students need. So these are two things that could be done. Then we need to have a national debate on how you fund higher education. No government wants this debate. But you know, when the loan system was set up, it was made clear at the time that the fee cap would increase by inflation every year. Since that decision was made in 2012, it has increased once by £250. That is not sustainable. As we move into the future, it won't be sustainable. Universities will not be able to continue to operate on that basis. And so a debate is needed about the funding. Now, students don't want to see the sticker price going up, because that makes them feel it's very expensive. Government worries that they might not get all of the as much of the money back if they put the price up, although I think that's not quite true when you look at the data. But if this funding mechanism isn't working, think up another funding mechanism. But what's certain is, if the country is going to have a future, if we are going to be the country that we all want us to be, we need educated young people, and our young people deserve the opportunity for education, which gives them the opportunity to be a high earner in the future and to make their contribution to the success of Britain. So we need that debate. There's not an easy answer. If it was me personally, I would say that at the moment, students pay probably 80 to 90% of the cost of their education themselves. The government pays 20%. I would put the challenge out and say, so what do employers pay? Because employers are the beneficiaries of an educated workforce. Why don't we have employers in that equation? Why don't we have some kind of hypothecated element of the tax that companies pay on profits that supports the higher education sector?
So that, Graham, as well, because I think that's really, really interesting, because I speak to a lot of leaders across local government, and when they're talking about is having the ability and the autonomy to be able to control the money they generate within their local area. Now, if your local university is working with local employers to demonstrate what skills they want to have coming out from there, not only are you really securing that future revenue stream from that employment, you're also linking in the council with the university. You're linking the employees of the future with the employers they're going to work for. You can match the culture. You can match the agenda. You can match this identity. It really just future. What is stopping that from happening?
Well, governments have got to make decisions. That's what's happening. Is everybody's hiding from the. I mean, a good example, another example that relates to just what you've said. I have been an advocate for a while when we talk about the worries of student housing. Right now, It's now very difficult for a university to be the investor in student housing, because effectively I would be investing the students' money, 80% of it or so, 90% of it's from the student. I would be investing that money in building accommodation that only a small proportion of my students will use. Right. So naturally, students say, I don't want your money to spend. I'm paying for my education. My money gets spent in education. And so we have private providers. But I've long felt, why can't we allow the local authorities to have the encouragement to use their fiscal borrowing to build student accommodation owned by the council? Because then the council benefits from the revenue that you get from students. So now you connect very directly the council's income with the student income. Second thing that makes me quite cross is the government doubled the amount of money that, and few people know this, the amount of money that every student has to pay as a levy on the NHS. So they pay an NHS levy. That levy was doubled. That levy is nearly £1,200 or so a student. So where does that money go? Because if it's a levy in the students who are studying at my university, it should go to my local hospital. Because after all, what it is for is the extra group of people that local hospital and local services are having to deal with. But it just disappears into government. If you were clear that money went, well, if I've got 5,000 students and they're all paying, you know, £1,500, that is a significant contribution to healthcare in the area. Because, of course, the reality is our students, overseas students, are young. They don't come with a lot of illnesses. They don't actually go to the doctor very often. And so they actually aren't a burden. In fact, it's a net gain into the health service because of that. But we don't have, that money doesn't go locally. I'd love to be able to say to my local hospital, how did you enjoy the £1 million or £500,000 that you got, or whatever it may be, as a result of international students studying at the university? You know, if I did that, my hospital would have a different view. They'd want more international students studying at Portsmouth.
Graham, it's been a delight talking to you this afternoon. Thank you for your insight, your honesty, your passion, and also for your service to the sector. It's fantastic. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Matthew.
If you've enjoyed this episode, remember a few things. We need to have a conversation about higher education, about the views around international students, about proper funding, and about a real sense of control of fees and revenue generated at a local level. That is how we unlock the potential and the future of the HE sector. But thank you for listening. Please tune back in for more episodes later in the week. Goodbye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Truth About Public Sector podcast. Now, 87% of listeners who enjoyed the podcast, do not leave a review, follow the podcast, or share it. Please, if you enjoyed the episode, like it, review it, and share the podcast. It allows us to keep doing this podcast for free to the public. Thank you very much.